May 24th, 1982, talking to Henry Okada in the lotto.
Okay, when the geese came in this spring, I was working, it was coming to weekend. Eddie, I told, well, we planned it, me and Eddie, we should go up. John Summers is up in Caillou Flats, springing out. He came down and he said there's few geese came in already. People growing up and down, you know, during the week. And they tell us a lot of geese. So, man, Eddie, we got itchy. So we took off weekend. And I told Eddie, well, I'm going to leave. While he was taking care of the milk. Well, he had high power snow machine. I had only little Elan, me. So I took off. I told him I'll wait at that certain lake way on this side of the Caillou. Right, man, where my brother left me, Archer Canada, he said that, well, we were staying under this pine tree, cold and miserable and snow and breaking trail ahead of our dogs. We were trying to go to Caillou. We were sitting there and, well, he called me, Henry, well, this is my last year on this trail. I asked him, well, what's he going to do? Well, he said, he's going to go look for work. And you, he told me, you. You'll be still on this trail because you drink. I didn't say nothing. Miserable. We're just shy washing it out. So I said, okay. So the next day we made it to Caillou. We stayed up there a couple of days, I guess. And then everybody, there was good trail. So we came back down. This spring, when I was going by there with the snow machine, I was just sitting down on the snow machine. I was just riding. I thought of my brother. When I seen this tree there again, how easy it could be right now compared to them days when I was using dogs.
And you had good trail to go on?
Good crust to go on. You just drive any place. Yeah. Pretty good right now. Now things are so easy. All you gotta have is just your gas and oil. And then when I got to this lake where I told Eddie that I was going to wait for him. I just soon got there and I was fooling around and I seen him coming. So he know more about the Caillou than I does. We got to John Summers camp. We had lunch there. And he told me, well, what's where we're going to go? And I just have to follow you. He knows that country better than I do. So he just took off towards where they see all the geese. But what happened? You see, it got so cold and it just froze all the water. The water was rushing down, all right, but it got so cold. Where it froze, where the water froze again, you just run across with the snow machines. And there was a bunch of guys up there already, you know, getting them geese. Well, Eddie said, well, you wait here at this one creek. And he said, he's going to try to chase some geese down to me. I don't know where he took off. There was a where they call, used to have been a store, long ago, I guess. There was a store there. A guy was going to start a store at that place. So they named this place after the store cabin, they call it store cabin. Nobody lives there now. I mean, we got in this lake, and so he took off, and I waited at this creek. But all I seen was about six geese flying about a mile high. So he came back, but he asked me if I seen anything. No, I tell him I seen about six, but flying my life. Well, he said that's the one he chased off up there. So I asked me what I'm going to do. I told him, I don't know what we're going to do. So we came, well, he said, let's go back down, look down this way. I tell him, okay. Well, he had a high powered snow machine than me, but he didn't want to run away from me. Like, I guess he just take it easy ahead of me. So I just keep right on his tail. I had this little Elan just going. And so we just came back to John's. John Summers was at his cabin. We asked him, well, what you going to need ducks? And he said, no geese. And he said, it's too cold. And we stayed around there till midnight. And we started back down. Boy, you can just see your breath coming back down on the trail there. Just that was that cold. It was about 5 below that night. I don't know what day of this though. It was early in May, you know. But early part in May, yeah. And then I just look at that tree again on my way back down again. I know, well, you can just, the crust, when you go on the crust with the snow machine, you're just like this on the table, you just can just drive in it. I kind of cut into the little bank, a little more to that tree. I wanted to make a good look at it again. I thought of my brother. Well, that's the way my brother said to me, and I'm still on this trail, and he's out in Arizona. That's the way I thought when I was passing that tree.
Did he ever come back to fish in the summer like he talked about?
Well, he was planning to come back this summer. I got a homestead down here 6 miles. And he asked me if he could use that place, you know. I told him, go ahead and go right ahead and put up a tent there or do anything you want there. Good. I got my wheel running right on my lot, right on the edge of my lot. I got my cable tied to hold my wheel right on the edge of my lot there. And then my camp is right now, just right around the bend there. So he said he was going to try to use my camp if he wanted to just get in a few fish, a few kings, I guess, he wants. And he said he's trying to get a boat. I don't know if he's still coming. I never heard from him for a long time, but he said that he was going to try to come.
Yvonne, you want to sit around the other side so you can get closer?
He came up for that, you know, as soon as he got the word that I lost my son. Mm-hmm. So we stayed down there. We stayed down 9 miles. He had a camp. We lost my son down here 6 miles, right at my camp, right at his wheel. He drowned it around there. That's the guy that was with him said. We were down at our camp, 9 miles below here, looking at our net. We just dropped our net back in, and we were going back down to the cross, back over to the bluff, and our bushing of our prop went out with our 50. So we just barely made it back across, but Simeon Mountain was waiting for us over there on the bluff side, 9 Mile Bluff, where we call 9 Mile Bluff. He knew that we were having trouble. So we came back up with him. I had another prop here to pick up, and I had another extra boat with 20 horse. So just when we were landing, he was packing his gas down. But I told him, we started up his wheel already. It was for him to go down, because we knew he was drinking. And here there was another man, and the boy was with him, two of them. So they took off going down while I was taking off the prop off my other kicker, mixing gas to go back down to pick up the big boat, our 50, down 9 miles. And then we saw him down here at about 7 miles camp. Berkman had a camp there. Berkman and his wife had his family there. They were fishing there. He had his boat there. While we were going by there, we were just close to the beach there, and he waved at us. Well, when we got back down to the bluff, there was teachers from here was fishing there too. They had net. They were just fishing for their dogs, you know. They were fishing commercial. And they just got there. We were going to start. And I heard my son's boat starting at that camp up there. And while we were talking, just these guys said they invited us for a cup of coffee. And we were sitting there just waiting for that coffee. We just seen a guy, what do you call that? Steve O'Brien was coming down with his boat. And as soon as they seen us, they came right straight into us. And my wife said, there's something wrong. Start saying something wrong. As soon as he landed, he told us. James went down. Oh, it hurt us. So we didn't know where. We came up. And we didn't know where. But Steve O'Brien said, Steve was down here at 4 miles. That's 2 miles above our camp. but he known James, and so he was going to go down and visit James. He thought James was at his wheel. But last time he said he saw the water splashing was about a little below the two wheels. So Steve wasn't, you know, it was windy, choppy. He got all upset. Well, when you see a guy in the water and you're that far away from, you just get off your mind, like, I guess. Because my brother, half-brother, Harry Brush, drowned it right on the side of Two Mile Island, what we call Two Mile Island, 5th of August. I don't know, that's the year, a few years ago anyway. Well, I was fishing down at the 6 Mile, fishing for a living then. And he was pushing up a boat, rowboat, with a one inboard motor, with one longer boat, air-cooled, we call it air-cooled. And I know he was coming up pretty slow, and I started waiting for him. I waited at my camp, and there he was coming, so I started helping him, pushing the boat. But I didn't know they were drinking, see. I didn't know they had home brew, where they had home brew, and they were drinking. And that what the boat they were pushing, little, oh, about 20-foot long boat, just loaded down with fish, dry fish, dogfish. It's all baled, 50 in a bale. And he was going to go out and check the boat, see if the boat was leaking. And there was a roll of tarp there, green tarp, heavy tarp. And he kicked that tarp and fell right overboard. And I reached down in with my one arm, and his wife and his daughter, the one they adopted, was in the boat. And the other two old couple was out there in the boat too. I reached down, but I just tipped him, that's all. So I jumped over to his boat, stopped his motor, and then I jumped back over to my boat. Well, by the time his wife got wild with me, then I start pulling my engine in reverse. I reversed for so far, and then I thought I would pass him. Here he floated up about 20 feet below me. And here was a roll of tarp was floating alongside of him, oh, about 10, 8 feet away from him. He was just belly up, and he was just moving his arms. Didn't even try to swim. I hollered at him, tried to grab that canvas. I even threw the pipe pole into him. Nothing. I was trying to hold his wife and his kid that he adopted. And I tried to work his engine. The damn motor quit with me when I pulled it in reverse too fast. You know, it just stopped. I just killed the motor then. Then I jump. It's used to start by a rope. You have to wind the rope around it, pull the flywheel, and sometimes it didn't start right away. So it finally started. And then I start reversing, but he already went down. And there was a kicker. It was 10-horse kickers them days, 10-horse Johnson. Franklin Madros, he just happened to, where we call it, Devil Island. It's about a mile and a half. He just hit that point, and then he ran out of gas. So he had to fill up his tank and get his kicker started. And then he had kind of hard time, he said. And he caught us up about right out here on the other side of the island where we're just coming in. I chopped the line off that one boat, pushed that boat, rammed that boat in, and I forgot about them old folks that was in that other boat. Franklin Madros, that was behind me, picked them up and brought them up here. But I was holding his wife down, and his daughter. And then we came back up here, and then we had to make hooks, grab hooks right away. Then we went back down there, start searching. And I just knew about there was a water snag sticking up out of the water. And I thought it was around there. Well, he went down around there all right. You figure that he had to drift before he hit the bottom too, you know. So it took us 7.5 hours before we fished him out. Somebody fished him out. But if Franklin Madros came up right behind us, we probably wouldn't save him. But after they fished him out, the nurse was here then too. Checked him out, you know, and he hit the side of the boat and broke his nose, and he was already knocked out then at the time. You know, he just keeled over, you know, and he just hit the side of the boat. And that's just about when them kickers were just about 10 horse kickers were coming out. The no big kickers, all everybody had just import motors. That's about it at that time.
That's in the 50s?
Yeah. Yeah, that was in the 50s sometimes. Because, yeah, that's in the 50s.
She seems like lots of people go down the river.
Yeah, well, when my boy drowned it, at Steve, boy, I really appreciate Steve, too. He used to go down. Well, I stayed at my camp 24 hours a day. There was always somebody was volunteer coming down, stay with me that night. My brother was staying at the bluff, where they call 9 Mile Bluff, right where the current hits. Goes in there and it just shoots, just the current just go right along the bluff there. We stayed down there 13 days. The 13th day, they found my boy. He was just floating. Leroy Summers and happened, just Leroy Summers just came down from the slope and him and their dad, it was just fishing closed that time again for the week. And they said that they went down, pretty soon they came down and Leroy Summers was going to stay down there with my brother and Freddie came back up to our camp and stayed overnight. He was going to stay overnight with us. And Andy Durney was, he was on nights. No, he stays up. I was up at night, and then we just stay, taking turns. Whenever we fall asleep, we just sleep for a little while. I couldn't sleep, but I don't know what made me sleep that night. You know, every time I hear any boats or somebody talking, I'm just wide awake again. And Leroy Summers and Tony Semica and my brother, they were all down there. Happened same way with my brother. He said, boy, he just fell asleep, and that was it. And Leroy Summers and his boy, Tony Simican, were there at the bluff. And they seen something floating down, and they couldn't let it go. But Leroy Summers said, oh, he's got to go out and check it. And Tony, I guess, another boy jumped in the boat with him, all my little 20-horse boat. And here he was just floating, just started floating down. And my brother said that when he didn't even hear that kicker started. He didn't even hear them when they came back in. Because somebody woke him up, they said they found James. And you know when, and there was a bunch of guys there, Edward Ciprian, all them guys. Them boat came up, I didn't even woke up. Nothing. I didn't even woke up. I think I was so tired or something. Till Andy Durney came into my mosquito bed net and he said, hey, they found James. I don't know what time it was, been about 4 o'clock in the morning. It just hit me just like that. Just sound asleep, just so tired. The 13th day, that's when they found him. 13 rough days working 24 hours a day watching. People's shirts drag every day. Well, my brother said the best bet we got now is just to wait, you know. So we start doing that. We start waiting now just for him to come up now. But we thought we'd lose him, you know. He might not float high enough to see him, but Leroy Summer just happened to just to be there. And just see, he's just seen his elbow, just like elbow, just floating down, way out too. Well, the current just shoots right out from that bluff out. And they were just lucky to find him. Same way what happened to this boy in Kaikuk, right up here, right below Last Chance in the spring. Well, water was cold in June yet. Happened, drowned it there. Was a bunch of guys, boys with him. The boat, I don't know what happened. We were up in Huslia for the funeral. When this, we heard that boy drowned it around or blow Last Chance. They were all drinking left here. So we came back and we went up there. They were searching, there's nothing. So they just built a camp there just like we did too. But they were running up and down the river, see? And this Vincent Yaska and this boy's brother, we seen them down here at this bluff. Eddie and I, we went down to check our King Salmon net. And Eddie was having trouble with a motor, with his big boat. So he was in the eddy there. And so we went back over to him. And here was that boat going down to Caltech, Vincent Yaska and this boy's brother that drowned. I know his brother's names, though. I know only Vincent Yaska. He's just a short little guy. So they said they're going to go all the way to Caltech, search all the way down to Caltech. And in the morning, so they stayed down there a little while and they started up again. It was just calm early in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, I guess. Just when the sun started coming up, they hit that bluff again. And the sun just smacked that place every time it started coming up, you know, this what we call 9 mile bluff. Nothing can miss that place. The current just comes right into the beach there and just the current just comes right along the beach there. Just right there. So he stopped there. He told this boy, we're gonna wait here. So Vincent was talking about it, and he said, when we lost my boy there, he was down there searching. He was telling us about it. So he said the water was kind of high, and so they stopped and stayed along the hillside to where the sun hit, but they had monoculars. And there was no drifts, nothing. Pretty soon he looked around, and his brother went to sleep like. He said he just sound asleep there, just right alongside of him. So he said he looked in the monoculars up this way. He seen something coming, floating. He had a jacket or a shirt on, I don't know. He said he seen something, a little breeze like, you know how it is. And so breeze comes up once in a while. He sees something waving like, it's like a shirt or something in monoculars, real good. But he was kind of blowed up like floating high, like, you know. So he didn't want to scare his brother or anything, you know. He woke him up easy. And he talked to him, he said. This is the way Vincent said. He said he talked to him. Don't get nervous or don't get excited if we happen to see anything, he told him. Before he put him back in the boat, you know. He seen it coming. So he hit right straight for that thing, and here, sure enough, here he was floating. That's about 11 miles from up here, that boat that drowned it. He floated, he picked him up down here at 9 miles.
That's just about
20
miles.
Yeah, he floated. Well, he searched and searched. His poor brother and his mother and his father had camp, just made a camp right there, just, you know, just lean out with black tarp. Just gonna wait there too, just like the way we did. And that was the best bet we had, just to wait for my son that time too. 13th day that we found him.
A hard time,
huh? Yeah, really hard. Man, I used to stay up. Well, I sure appreciate them guys that used to stay with us, you know. Well, they were fishing going on, you know, and they had to work all day, and then they go back down in the evenings. Every time the fishing closed, they're more gladly to go down, stay with us, and help us, you know, and then they keep searching, keep dragging, even they kept dragging the whole place before, and they just keep trying. And the 13th day, though, they found him. We didn't know where he floated up or nothing. So it was really hard. I don't know how many times a night I go up from my camp to the wheel, walk forward and back, watching for something. We pulled in our wheels just to give enough clearance, you know. We pulled them all in. They thought he might be around there and everything. They fish out everything. What we lose in the water, you know, like piece of wire, you know, like all that piece of cables. They fished that all out, everything.
Clean up the river wire.
Yeah. But the body still couldn't, they couldn't never fish the body out.
The people always do that, they really help out.
Yeah. Yeah, they really, you know, well, anything happens like that, we always trying to help each other, you know. We, like, we go there and try to do the what we can do, you know. Because it's just like it's all in one village, like, you know, just help one another, like, anything happens, we just have to, you know, some guys, well, like that one year, his Hondorf guys, kids, they were twins. And their dad was running post office, Max Hondorf. That's after he remarried, after my sister died in Holy Cross, he remarried this lady with a twin boys and a girl. And he moved up here to, he was a weather station man. And then after the weather station closed, he ran post office. Max Hondorf was his name. So his sister married a marshal that was Frank Exworth, who was a marshal here. And they got married, and then his wife got killed on the highway between Anchorage and Fairbanks. So they brought the body back to here because he was gradually just raised up in here. And they wanted the sister to be buried here. And their mother was here anyway. They were still here, living here. And we were fishing down here at Six Mile, me and my wife and all of us there. He came down. I don't know what time they said they're going to have the funeral. At 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock in the morning. Okay. So we started up down the camp early. So we got up here before the funeral mass. And while we were just going to the funeral mass, he was floating down in a kicker boat. There was an, I don't know how big a kicker it was. Well, it was them old time kickers, not fast kickers. And lower end of this island down here. And then somebody went after him. Austin the Smalka went after him in an inboard motor boat. Before he got to him, he seen water splashed, keeled over. Just, and when we were just getting out of church, he was coming back in Austin and Smalka in an inboard motor. He said that guy fell overboard, tied up the boat right there. All he seen was water splash. And he was a good swimmer and he just fell asleep and drowned it right there. Took 4.5 hours before they fished him out. They just got in the boat there. They start the search all over first, you know. His brothers known that he was a good swimmer. And they thought he might have swum to the beach. We looked and looked and looked, no tracks. So he started dragging. But there was a lot of sweepers along this island. Keep caving in with the sweepers, you see. And so we didn't know what to do. So they dragged, we dragged and dragged, but no. So there was a Henry Agnes, I guess, went in the boat, threw the hook in like that a couple of times, right from his boat there, just where that boy tied that boat, threw it in, start reeling it in. A couple of times, the second or third time, he threw the hook in, he had him, fished him out, just right there.
Just went straight down.
Yeah. And then had brought him back in, had another funeral mass, had double funeral mass right there for his sister and his brother. Yeah. Buried them together one time. See, and then, I don't know, 1959 or something, I guess, his brother got killed in a plane too. One of his twins. So the guy was just running around all night in boat. He's telling the people what time they're going after funeral mass for his sister. Fished him out and just had another funeral mass, had double funeral mass there, and break them together one time.
Huh. What happens when somebody drowns like that? happens if they can't ever find you?
Well, that's a poor chance we have right now, you see. Like the way my son was, you know, like Steve O'Leary, you know, he's seen the water splash, but we couldn't make sure where the last time he went down to, you see. But you figure, like that a couple of years ago, 3-4 years ago, there was a Roland Summers. Went right into the open hole, right at Kaikuk, right on the other side of Kaikuk Island there. Went down in the open hole. Snow machine and everything. Now they got the divers. They brought the divers and everything in. Okay, now them guys, they dove. They dove, I don't know how many times. And they tell us how the bottom is, you know. They tell us how the bottom is. That place, it's got a rut there, and that place got a rut there. And the snow machines are right down here. The number, one is 250 and one is 300. They just tell us where the 250 and 300 snow machines were. They had two. But there was three of them. Vernon Summers had a girl behind him, and the other one was right behind him. But you see, what this other guy that did behind him, I guess they grabbed with each other, you see. So they swam to, they drift right away to the ice along the edge there, so they jumped or something. But when we got there, there was that girl's leather rabbit skin mitts frozen to the ice there. And they said they saw him floating. And then he went down. But the open hole was pretty big, pretty long. So the divers, they didn't want to get under the ice and search, you see. We didn't want to get under that ice. But we cut ice all pretty big towards the beach then, because the kind of current was kind of going under the ice towards the beach there. And the divers, they said, well, the rut is like this, and you got current about 4 feet from the top down, that's all, you got current. Down at the bottom, you're just dead water. No way of the body will move. So water was muddy, and did. They had the safety line to these divers. They didn't want to get under the ice, see? They didn't want to search under the ice. So they tell us what they said. They just combed the whole bottom there. And they tell you how the bottom is. They said it's just a sand bottom, rut there, rut this way, rut that way. And they just point to everything right there. And they said they can tie the rope to the snow machines if we want to fish them out. But we don't care about the snow machine. We want to get the body first. But he said the body, if the guy goes down, okay, the guy goes down, the last time they saw him, if he's going down, he's got to be about 30 or 40 feet below there before he hits the bottom. And it's going to stay right there. No way up there. It's going to move. So we searched and searched there. Well, it took us about 4 days. Anyway, this was December. In December. So we went back up there again, and the whole village just go back up there again. So we cut ice into the beach again. Oh, I don't know how wide we cut in beach a chainsaw again. So the guy, you know, the ice was thick. Oh, it was about 1.5-2 feet thick already, right along the where we were cutting. We just kept chipping them off with chainsaw. Okay, now there's a boy, Kaikuk boy there, start dragging, just walking along upstream, dragging the hook. The fourth day, he fished them out, just right there. And the divers was, you know, they went, I don't blame the divers for not getting under the ice, you know. That safety line, they lose that safety line, they're gone too, you know. But they tell us that the dragging is the best thing you guys can do. There was about three divers there. So they set the cut in a little more to the ice, to the beach. They tell us how the current, the top current goes. They said it kind of goes under that ice there. And from the last time the guys saw them, they shouldn't be not more than 30, 40 feet. And them guys that saw them, going down, you know, were there with us. And they we mark about the place. They were sure enough, about 40 feet or 30 feet, he was there.
So the only current in the wintertime is just right under the ice, and then
This was the first body that ever went down the ice like that in the current. That was the first one right close by to the village that drowned it around here. We hear some other places they drown, you know. But they get them out because it's either in a lake or dead waters, you know, and they just go right there, you know, they just go right straight down.
Where are these divers from? They have
the divers came from Anchorage. They chartered with them guys all the way from Anchorage to try to get their son, you know, to try to get, they thought they lost them, you know. They thought they, well, how would they got a hold of them? You see, there was somebody drowned it in all around Grayling, but this was clear water. You can see the water right there. Clear water, just like a lot of river water. But it was pretty deep. So they got a diver down there. Well, he just jumped right in, pulled the body up right now. There he was right there, just straight down. There was hardly any current there. No current there, I guess, you know. But this was clear water, they said. But the divers, they said all you could have seen at the bottom is about 2 feet ahead of you. That's about how far that water is, that clear. Now it's sand in it, you know, it's just all salt. So all they could see is about 2 feet ahead of you, and they were using flashlight, water flashlight, and they say it helps a little bit. But the way they sound, man, they just tell you everything, how that bottom of that river is.
What happens in, I know people feel real bad, but what if they just plain can't find them?
Well, that's just our hard luck, you know, but we just keep trying.
So, like, for instance, if somebody just can't find them, they're just going to try all summer. It happens in summer.
Mm-hmm.
They just keep trying all summer.
Yeah.
They just got to quit everything else they're doing.
They'll just keep trying, and then every village, you know, every village, they'll be watching real close, look along the beach, or check anything that you see floating, you know. Like a few years ago, there was a gal drowned up here, just about right after the ice up here, 3 miles, about 5 miles up behind an island. Well, it was, I shouldn't say, that's okay. But it was, we never did find that gal either. Couldn't find that gal at all. Oh yeah, really bon. Well, all like that time we couldn't find that girl. That spring, we searched about a week. People search. Well, you know, they had to start getting ready for fishing, you know. But the whole summer, you know, every boat or up and down the river between here and Caltech, I bet you they never get past anything that's floating without checking it. Or checking along the bars or beach or anything, you know. Like that, they just look for the seagulls, you know, like if they're on the bars and like if the water is dropping, you know, that's the best bet they got. You know, hit for the bars like driftwoods, you know. So that's only the place we search around the bars. Make sure if you see anything, then you check it over, you know. It's only the best bets we got like that.
And the people talk a lot, especially to young people, about, you know, being real careful and about drowning.
Yeah. Well, you see these campfire girls learning these kids to swim. And that's the best deal we ever did get, you know, for little kids. Now, there's a lot of kids last couple of years learning how to swim, and that's really good for them, you know, to learn them how to swim, because anything that could happen, you know, if you get by themselves, they'll know what to do. And we don't want to, that's really good for them campfire girls to keep coming in, for them kids to learn to swim. Sure, looking, appreciate you.
And people really try and stop people from going out in the river when it's rough.
That's drinking problem. All that does, you know, that's losing these people, you know. Carelessness, driving, go up, you know, play around in boats and going. Now, like when I lost my son, I got all kind of life jackets there in the house, hanging in the shed. And he should have life jacket. He had a brand new life jacket, what he should leave in the boat all the time. And he just didn't even leave it in the boat. You see, he's just drinking and, you know, just carelessness. And don't use no life jacket or anything. Now, if all them people just be careful driving, you know, this stuff would hardly happen.
How do you talk to somebody that's drinking and just wants to go? I mean,
well, you see, that's the problem we have around here, you see. Now, last chance, it's just 12 miles up here. And now the people got all high-powered kickers, small boats, and they know that they'll get there, so they'll, no matter how slow they go, that booze or beer will never run away from them. That's what really hurts. But they just push that throttle right down to as far as it'll go to get to that last chance fast. They don't care if they're heading drifts or ice or anything, you know. That drifts is just like ice when they start coming down. It's so thick sometimes. And you ply with boats, and heck, you just hit them ply under log water, might tear off your whole back end of your boat. And then you got no place to do it. So most of them got no life jackets on while drinking, you know, and then get drunk in the boat, start coming down, couldn't stay. They couldn't wait till they get back on the beach. And then sometimes they just want to show off and make sharp turns. And seems like same way with snow machines. They want to just get there just fast and just tear around. You see, that's not like long ago, you see. How we was raised. That's what hurts me. How we was raised. If they were raised just like them days how we were raised right now, it would make a lot of difference, you know. Now things coming too easy for them. They're just coming things too easy for them. Like, if they had to pay for their stuff, like the way we were doing, you know, and they got to stop to think. I got to take care of that stuff. I got to take care of my snow machine. I got to take care of my boat. Cost me a lot of money to get that. See, I worked this long. They don't think like that. You see, their father or their mother got boats and stuff like that, good boats. So they got to go as fast as they can go with it and just tear it up. Now, this same way with that, my boy. You see, he had about 16, 14 feet long fiberglass boat. That's what got him. Had a 48 Mariner on it. I told him, I don't know how many times, James, you don't need that big of a boat. That's too small for that high-powered kicker. No, he wouldn't listen to me. I tell him, you shouldn't drink while you're on the boat, traveling around. No, he just don't listen. He likes to drink, travel up and down. That's just what got him, you know. Same way with another son out here. Drinks, likes to drink. I tell him, Don't drink too much. No, they don't listen. Things come too easy to them now.
You think they just get a little older, they'll change?
Just hopefully they change, you know. Now things come too easy. Now people can drink for 3-4 days or a week and think nothing of it. And booze. Hey, booze costs like heck right now. In my days, when I first started seeing liquor store here, there were Stockman, Russell, John Summers had liquor stores. There was two liquor stores. There was three stores here. That's when I start to remember. And them people had was a pint of whiskey was $1.50. Fifth was $3, they say. I heard them old people talking. And you think them people now, them days, they could have had $1.50 to flash right now? No, they had to struggle for that $1.50. Six bits was half a pint. And they still had a hard time to get six bits. See, I listened to them old guys when I started listening to them talking. Boy, I felt so, yeah, well, I used to drink too. I used to have a few, but I had a hard time to even get $1.50. Now it came up to $7 a fifth that time. It was still harder. Now it's, I don't know what it is, $12, $13 a fifth. I don't know what it's, $7 or $8 a pint. And now it's nothing for them. Gee, boy, it scares me once in a while. If I had that kind of money to throw around, man, I don't think I would do.